Second half of the program begins right now around the country, talking to the people covering the stories where they are happening. You know, we call it the two-minute drill, and we start in a place. Why not? They're national champions. Again, Tuscaloosa, Alabama is where we will begin. Ben Jones from the Tuscaloosa News is with us. Ben, how are you?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Not bad. Is it even fun anymore winning these titles because you've won five of the last nine?
Well, I've only been here since 2015, so I've gotten to cover three straight national championships and three straight national championship games and two national championship wins. So maybe not quite as old hat to me as some of the folks around here. But, you know, I always appreciate getting the opportunity to do something like that.
But for the fans, is it a subdued reaction from what you'd expect for winning a national championship? I mean, is it becoming blasé for them?
I think in some ways, yes. In some ways, I think particularly people within the program really appreciated the one this year because it was a little bit unexpected. It was a little bit more difficult than it had been in previous years. You know, some of the injuries that Alabama had to overcome this year, some of the problems that the team had during the course of the season. Because of that, I think this one probably meant a little bit more to some of the coaches and players.
And, of course, Nick Saban says about 24 hours to enjoy it. Then you're on to the next challenge, and part of that challenge will be how he handles the quarterback position. First of all, do you buy what Lane Kiffin said, that Tua was going to be leaving if he didn't play in that game?
I don't quite buy it, just because I think Tua understood that he was going to have a good chance to push Jalen for the job this coming spring and fall, even if he hadn't played in the national championship game. I do think that if he hadn't been able to take the job in spring or in fall practice, or if he didn't feel like he was getting a fair shot at it, then he probably would have moved on.
Okay. Who wins the job, or how is it handled? Is it co-quarterbacks next year for Nick Saban, or does one get the job?
You know, they've never had a situation here where they've gone for an extended period with two quarterbacks. They have had situations early in the season before where they've played a couple of guys until one guy really kind of grabbed the job. But I don't think that it's really in Nick's nature to play two different quarterbacks. You know, as far as who's going to win the job, it's going to be really difficult, you know, to try and pick something like that. But the best thing that Jalen does is that he doesn't make mistakes. He had three turnovers all season long. Tua Tagovailoa obviously brings a passing element to the offense that Jalen hasn't been able to bring in the last couple seasons. But at the same time, the guy threw an interception on a run play in the second half of the national championship game. That's something that is going to be kind of hard for Nick Saban to overlook because he's kind of he always wants his quarterbacks to minimize the damage, first of all.
Yeah, all right. I mean, that makes sense. But, man, watching that kid make plays, I don't know how you know, you don't just say, here are the keys, young man, and we'll be good enough to overcome it. Listen, they had massive defections, and I know Alabama just reloads, and they will reload again. But they had massive defections to the NFL last year, a lot of starters they had to replace, which is scary for the team that's on the field next year because so many different freshmen. But, again, they've got a lot more defections. Are they really – at a point that they can just keep, I think, what is it, six, seven, eight guys already have declared to go for Alabama? Can they really just reload? I know we've gotten to a point, and Alabama's earned it, just pick them number one next year, let them prove you wrong. But is it that easy, or could all this early exit NFL talent eventually catch up to them?
You know, it'll be really interesting to see. Alabama did have five juniors who declared for the NFL draft. We think that'll be the last of it. We don't think anyone else is going to declare. But if you look at the juniors and seniors that are walking out the door this year, it's the entire starting secondary, the top six defensive backs, both starting inside linebackers, the defensive tackle, two of the three starters on the defensive line, the number one wide receiver, one of the top running backs on the team. They are losing a lot. At the same time, there will be a lot of people who will look at the national championship game and say, you had a true freshman in there at quarterback. You had three true freshman wide receivers who were playing. You had a true freshman at running back. And then when the left tackle got hurt, they put a true freshman in at left tackle. There's still a lot coming back here. I think that particularly offensively, they should have a really strong core next year.
All right, what's wrong with the basketball team? And is there any? Is anyone expecting any kind of fallout in the future from the FBI investigation?
No, I don't know if there's anything to worry about with the FBI investigation at this point. Colin Sexton, the star freshman, did sit out the first game of the season and then has been able to play since then. Team hasn't quite gelled like a lot of people expected it would. Maybe some of that has to do with Braxton Key, who was probably the best player on the team last year, was injured at the start of the season and didn't come back until about New Year's, end of December or so. So trying to work him back in, try and get things to gel with him and Colin Sexton and John Petty, some of the other freshmen. There's still time, I think, for this team to make an NCAA tournament appearance, and that's what the expectation is for this year. I don't think that Avery Johnson would be let go after this year, but if they don't make the NCAA tournament, then he would probably go into next year on the hot seat.
All right. That's interesting. Certainly able to land talent. Don't know that he can coach it. That's what we're waiting to see. All right. Great stuff. Mm-hmm. Ben Jones in Tuscaloosa. Appreciate the time, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Roxy Bernstein in San Francisco, California is next. 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN broadcaster. Roxy, how are you?
Hi, Saran. What's up, pal?
Not much. How was Santa Clara, by the way, last night? I saw you had the call on St. Mary's and Santa Clara. How was it?
St. Mary's pretty good, and Santa Clara is not very good, but St. Mary's, that's a really good team. They've won 11 straight. They're so efficient, Saran. They do what they do. They're fun to watch. They're a definite tournament team this year.
Yeah, good, because I drafted them in my team draft, which is based on getting teams
in.
You
buy a stock and jock, huh?
Landale. You know, listen, the only reason I was watching you do Santa Clara St. Mary's last night is because I got St. Mary's. I won't lie. When that game rolled around, I was like, oh, good. At least Roxy's doing it, so I got that going for me. All right, let's talk about John Gruden's the head coach. Listen, I get it. Track record's good enough. I know people are shooting some holes in it, and there's reason to say it wasn't going that great in Tampa and all those different things. But overall, I would think that at least hiring John Gruden is widely celebrated. Maybe the contract length is not, but or am I wrong? Is there people that actually don't like the hire?
Can I quote Mark Davis, Saran?
I know where you're going. Yes,
this is a big effing deal. It has completely galvanized the Raider fan base. And let's face it, this is a team that's leaving in 2 years, and they needed a spark. And this is definitely going to give it to them. I think the Raider fan base, the Oakland Raider fan base, has bought back in. The ones that deserted them, I think, have bought back in because of Gruden. And Gruden has said the right things about Oakland. I want to do this for Oakland. This is the Oakland Raiders and the black hole. And we know how smart Gruden is, and he's doing everything right at this point. But there's a lot of work to be done. Let's see the staff that he assembles. Is he ready to be that maniacal grinder that he has been in the past? I believe he is, and this is more than just a coaching hire. This is also a PR hire by the Raiders. And so far, it's a home run for Oakland.
Yeah, okay. What does he do personnel-wise? They're starting to get up against the cap. That's going to be one of the things. He is going to have his general manager in place, which was one of the things that maybe wasn't necessarily for sure, but walking away from the Packer offer. They got to get Khalil Mack signed, right? And they're starting to get some cap issues.
Yeah, they are. But you know what? Gruden's going to have complete say in everything. I mean, I don't want to say he's going to have Al Davis control, but he's going to be pretty darn close. That Mark Davis is giving him essentially free reign to do whatever. Okay, yes, Reggie McKenzie is still involved, but they'll bring somebody else in. But Gruden's going to have the ultimate say on everything. And when you've got a 10-year, $100 million contract, that basically says that Mark Davis is all in trusting Gruden to get the Raiders back. But there's a lot of work also, not just salary cap-wise and roster tinkering. He's got to get Derek Carr turned back around. He's got to get Derek Carr right because he regressed this year. And the offense, this was supposed to be one of the best offenses in the NFL, completely regressed. That's what Gruden has to get in there and fix. He's got to get Amari Cooper going. They have to find some way to get the running game going. Is Marshawn Lynch going to be a part of the equation going forward? There's a lot of decisions the Raiders need to make here in the next few weeks.
If there's one obvious thing, you know, the Rooney Rule has been talked about, that they may have violated the Rooney Rule because they only interviewed T. Martin, the offensive coordinator at USC. But listen, if there's one team that could get away with that, it's the Raiders. They hired what was Lane Kiffin when they hired him? Like the quarterback coach at USC or something?
He was the co-coordinator with Steve Sarkisian at USC for Pete Carroll. But you're right. I mean, the Raiders, look, you can't question their history with Art Shell making him the first African-American coach, with Tom Flores making him the first Latino-American head coach, hiring the first woman to be a COO of a franchise in Amy Trask. So the Raiders have been out front. They've been innovators in integrating people from all different backgrounds. And I get where people may take exception with the Raiders, because they probably did violate the Rooney Rule in terms of when they went after John Gruden. But Mark Davis had a specific guy in mind. And it's not just this year. He's tried to get Gruden to come back in the past, and Gruden hasn't done it. This time around, though, Gruden jumped at the opportunity to get back in.
Yeah, I know. Look, I they violated the spirit of the Rooney Rule, but they lived up to the Rooney Rule. And that's the thing. I love the Rooney Rule. I think it's a great rule. And at least, T. Martin's now done an NFL interview. So even if he never realistically had a shot to get the job, which a lot of times that's the case, he did get the experience of going through it. So I think the rule did still serve a purpose there. Let's go over to the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo, what is his future? Is it multi-year deal? Is it franchise tag? I mean, the 49ers aren't going to let him go after the finish he had, but how does it play out?
There is zero chance that they let him go. And I think they try to get to a long-term deal between the two sides. And if that doesn't work, the fallback is always the franchise tag. But the Niners are all in as far as Jimmy G. And whether you want to say they stole him for a second-round pick, it's clear that he is the quarterback of the future, that Kyle Shanahan has his guy. And now they just need to build around him. And this is – it's funny. There's a lot of momentum now. I just remember a year ago how bleak it looked for the 49ers. They don't have a quarterback. And then they have to start over again with Shanahan and John Lynch as a GM. The Niner fan base is just completely energized with what's transpired. They finished the season on a 5-game winning streak. And there's a lot of momentum for the 49ers going into the offseason. Locking up Garoppolo is plan number one. But they also have $117 million they can spend. So the Niners are going to be, I think, proactive as far as free agents go. They need to be judicious as well. Some other decisions need to be made surrounding Carlos Hyde. Do you bring him back as your running back? And it appears that the Niners and the Rams are on the upswing. Certainly the Rams are already there in the NFC West. But with Seattle fading possibly and a little bit of disarray for the Cardinals, the Niners are ready to swoop in and I think be that biggest threat to the Rams right now in the division.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, that makes sense. Two good young quarterbacks taking over the division. Roxy Bernstein there in the Bay Area. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, my friend.
And so does our buddy Munch Bishop, ESPN Cleveland in Cleveland, Ohio. Munch, how are you, my friend?
Brother, I am superb. And I was just telling your sidekick there that it's interesting that rarely do I see it 31 degrees. Now, I'm not a brain surgeon or anything, rocket scientists are in, but I've always felt that 32 was the freezing point. That's pretty much the norm, right?
Yeah. That's where it's, well, listen, we aspire to 32 degrees.
How could it be pouring rain in Cleveland right now in 31? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, trust me, because you're getting what we had yesterday is rolling through for you. So hopefully our ice storm that could have gotten bad didn't end up being very bad. Hopefully that's how it is for you there as well. Let's talk about the Browns front office. Where is the popularity? We see John Dorsey filling it out. He raids the chief staff for a few guys. He's putting people together. Where is the popularity of John Dorsey in his front office right now?
John Dorsey's popularity is skyrocketing on a daily basis. You know, here's the problem. And when people tell me, well, you know, I just heard somebody say yesterday, shortly after I spoke to you, well, just think, if Sashi was still here, no, you don't want Sashi. Sashi gave up Deshaun Watson for Jabril Peppers and for David Njoku. No, they didn't mean anything. But you finally have people here that know the game, that are football people. I'll tell you what, though, there's still a sticking point, Sorin, is that Paul DePodesta is still on the staff. Of course, he's a baseball analytics guy. It's different if you're pitching to me. I can see some analytics there. In football, I don't have any place for it anyway, shape, or form. But here's a guy, you want to talk about credibility, said that Carson Wentz was not on his top list of top 20 players coming into the draft in the National Football League, how he could still be there. People are still shaking their heads because he has photos of somebody. But the bottom line is Dorsey's on top of the world right now in Cleveland.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think if you marry John Dorsey's great scouting eye with a good numbers guy, it could be, if they work well together, could be a marriage made in heaven because you get the best of both worlds. I mean, I would want the scout to get the final say. But as we talked about yesterday when I was on with you, you're going to have to get the cap right. And John struggled, I think, a little bit with that. But I think, John, with all those picks and all that cap room, I think you're in a good situation. Do you use some of those picks and that cap room on Alex Smith, or is there another quarterback that everybody's got their eye on?
Well, Alex Smith seems to be the front runner. I know there's a few little things there, but there's a few little things with every quarterback. Here's the thing. Everyone's enamored with draft picks still, even though the horrible drafting in the last 2 years. But think about this, Sorin. If they would go the Kirk Cousins route, then you don't really need to take a quarterback at number one overall. I would understand that. Although I could flash back, if this seems like it wasn't that long ago, that RG3 and Cousins were taken in the same draft by the Washington Redskins. But the bottom line quarterback, there's more trepidation and people screaming and getting ready to jump out of windows when Chase Daniel's name is mentioned, okay? But right now, Alex Smith seems to be the quote-unquote popular choice. A.J. McCarron's name still pops up on occasion. I believe that's due to Hugh Jackson and his friendship with A.J.
Yeah, and Hugh Jackson, is he a lifetime coach there with the Browns? Or is it, hey, let me see how it works, John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson, and we'll make a determination after the year?
Well, I believe the determination will be made by John Dorsey, number one. Personally like you. We have friends like that, don't we? But number two, we have friends also that we're not going to loan our cars to or let them stay at our houses if we go away on vacation. How can you possibly get a seal of approval, get a ringing endorsement from the owner, Sorin, when you're 1-31 and your game day decisions are horrific and the team has no discipline? Offsides, encroachment, 12 men on the field, too much time, delay of game. I can go on, running the option in pros and leading to a fumble. I can go on and on with that. I'm personally shocked that Hugh is still there. If indeed things happen and he goes through training camp, which I feel they will, you know, if they would come out of the gates 0-3, 1-3, 0-4, he'll be shown the exit.
Okay. 0-16 parade that raised a bunch of money for charity. Were you part of the 0-16 parade?
You better believe it, brother. And a year ago, I was dead set against it. I felt the city, and you know things, man. You don't live in a bubble. Cleveland had been much maligned. We had just come off the Republican National Convention. We're in every trade magazine, travel magazine is a great place to stop, stuff to do, more theater seats after New York City than any other city in the country. On down the line, arts districts, great neighborhoods. Well, the bottom line is this. Last year, I felt it was more of a slam on the city, and I was dead set against it. I know they raised money for the food bank, but like I said, I'd rather starve than eat your bread. I don't take money from scoundrels, okay? And so I went out and raised four times what they raised just through private donations. However, this year, I felt the vibe, which it was. 95% of that parade was venom, as it should have been, directed at the owner of the Cleveland Browns, Jimmy Haslam. And I've never seen so many variation of orange jail jumpsuits, okay, and drawings of Jimmy in there. But I was all for it. Some of the players got down on it, and players that I think are pretty good. Christian Kirksey, Emmanuel Ogbah, Danny Shelton. I challenge all of them to come on my show. The first thing I'd ask them is, you are calling us out that we're not fans and we still go to the games and you're 0-16? Think about that. But the venom was directed at the ownership, as it should have been.
All right, tell me real quick on the Cavs. Their defense is a problem. Got laid out last night. LeBron is blowing up. Listen, they've been written off as dead a couple of times already this year. Is this just another one that after an 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 game win streak, everyone who's jumping on them is going to look like an idiot, or do they have real problems?
Bro, right now there are some problems. I don't know how J.R. Smith and Jay Crowder are allowed to stay in the starting lineup. We know what defense is. Defense is heart. It's desire. It's moving your feet. Here's what I'm going to say. I know that they weren't too fond of this five-game road trip. It happens. Okay, prima donna boys that are making millions of dollars. I don't begrudge them that. They're the best of the world. However, they need to draw a line in the sand on Monday when Golden State comes in. Indiana, always plays himself tonight. It'll be interesting, too. But I also don't like getting beat by guys that you don't even know who they are. That's what happened last night in Toronto. Of course, a couple of their starters out. There are guys throwing down on the Cavs, going to the hole. Heck, you know, I could have jumped in front of them, and even if I didn't take a charge, at least I'd get a blocking foul on them. Yeah, there's something going on there that's not good. A lot of fingers are being pointed now at Ty Lue, my friend, so keep your eyes on that.
Wow, that is interesting. One of our own, by the way, from Raytown, right here, one of our suburbs here in Kansas City. Munch Bishop in Cleveland. Great stuff as always, my friend. I appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
I appreciate you, and as I always say, Casey's lucky to have you there, man.
You're a good man. Thanks, Munch.